You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jays. Raining Jays. Millie.
I know you remain even keel, but is there any level of frustration, concern on your part right now?
With what?
This team and where the inconsistencies.
Well, this wasn't an inconsistent night. This was a special performance that beat us. You know, again, I think sometimes you have to take your hat off to him. It's a good team. It's a well-coached team. They play really hard, and he's, you know, on a great run. So, you know, I try to look at things objectively. Saturday night was disappointing in a number of ways. Tonight, you saw more of what we want to be.
That's Brad Stevens being a lot more positive than a lot of people are on social media, being a lot more positive than I think I can be right now, but he's basically saying that tonight was different. Tonight he saw a lot more positive than he had seen in prior games, that the Saturday game was a lot more of a debacle, and this was closer to what the Celtics want to be. So we're going to look at that. We're the Raining Jays, John Corrales, Samuel, Jamison, Packard, the third, here after a Celtics disappointing loss, 117-112 to the Charlotte Hornets. In Charlotte, Kemba Walker was the real big story, 43 points. He shot 14 of 25, 56%, 7 of 13 from 3, Jesus, 54% from 3. Add another 8 of 9 from the line, and Kemba Walker scored 103 points over his last two games. That's crazy. Kemba, as Brad Stevens said postgame, is just in a special zone. And as the Celtics had a 10-point lead down the stretch, and Kemba took over. Part of it was when Kyrie is on the bench, and then Kyrie came in and he just couldn't take over again. And this is just how it went. This was the Kemba Walker night. And I think when the Celtics, Sam, lose a game like this, the negative things that we would have kind of looked past if the Celtics had won, those now suddenly become highlighted. And the positive things that we would have focused on if the Celtics had won kind of just fall by the wayside.
Yeah. And the thing Brad Stevens says is it wasn't like a frustrating loss. This was just like a superstar performance from Kemba Walker. And that's the way I tend to see it. Just like going back and looking at the play by play, like they were up 98 to, I think, 88 at one point.
Yep.
Willie Hernan Gomez gets a dunk. And then after that, Mook gets called for a traveling call. Kemba makes a three. Aaron Baines, you go to Marcus Smart in the post against Tony Parker. Something you think is a favorable matchup. He doesn't miss it. Kemba hits a shot. Aaron Baines gets called. Like, the Celtics still go to the rim. You still have Jason Tatum going to the rim, but Aaron Baines gets called for an offensive foul. Kemba makes a shot. And it just so happened that, like, for 7 or 8 possessions in a row, Kemba Walker just was not missing, and it was unstoppable. We can talk about the defense and the Celtics' propensity to have huge games score against them, Jamal Murray, Devin Booker, Kawhi Leonard, and now Kemba. And I think Al Horford was a step slow for the night. They did a lot of switching, and that allowed Kemba to kind of attack Al. Kemba was insane. It felt like Isaiah Thomas of 2 years ago at some point, where he just like couldn't miss either from three or going to the rim. I don't think the process of what the Celtics were doing in the fourth quarter was that bad. It's just when you have one mistake and then it's every single time your mistake's punished by a three-point shot by Kemba Walker, they compound very, very quickly. And so that happened. They managed to actually like stay in the game a little bit. They were only down 2 points, and then they actually forced Kemba to miss two shots, but couldn't get either of the rebound. And then that's really a backbreaking situation right there. But I thought they actually did some good things in today's game. It's just when you run into a guy who scores 21 points in a quarter, I mean, yes, you want to maybe talk about switching the defense up. Maybe you blitz him more on pick and rolls and get the ball out of his hands. That's a tactical thing. But in terms of what the Celtics actually did, I'm agreeing with Brad here that I didn't think it was their worst performance. You just ran into a guy who's clearly going supernova right now.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. I think there are certain things that they did that there are certain performances in this game that were not great. And then there were certain things that didn't bounce their way. Like Kyrie and Tommy Heinsohn said it in the post game. You expect Kyrie to make a lot of these shots down the stretch, and he missed. He missed open threes down the stretch that he made. Those are shots that he made in prior games to beat Toronto, to will the Celtics back against Phoenix. In those wins, Kyrie was making these shots. And early on, it was a duel, but he didn't. And you can't expect him to make all of these shots. It just sucks that he didn't make those shots, and Kemba was going completely nuts. I'm just looking at, going back and looking at the numbers here. The Celtics had that 10-point lead with 5:55 to go. So it was 99-99. Horford made two. It was 100-99. Horford had made two free throws with 5:55 to go. So basically in the last 6 minutes of the game, Kemba Walker scored 11 points in the last 6 minutes of the game. And that also includes Tony Parker hitting a couple of shots when Kemba Walker was taken out of the play. Like for a couple of possessions, Marcus Smart had actually taken Kemba Walker out of the play.
Exactly. Like he did, like they did a very good job of trying to stop Kemba Walker. It just so happened that 36-year-old Tony Parker still has a step left in him.
It's so funny. I'm sorry, but that Tony Parker, those two pull-up jumpers that he made that got it to 114-108 were probably more important than a lot of the Kemba Walker shots because they had taken Walker out of the game. Like Marcus Smart had done a fantastic job, finally, of denying him the ball. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they don't get stops when it's 100-110 or 108-110 or 110-108 Charlotte. They don't get stops. If they get a stop there, and that was the possession where it was a miss, a rebound, a miss, a rebound. Walker actually missed a rebound, and then Parker got the jump shot. That, if you want to single it to one play, that possession there. The Celtics, with 3 minutes to go, were down two. Bridges misses a jump shot. Walker gets a rebound. Walker misses a jump shot. Batum gets a rebound. Walker misses a three. He gets his own rebound. And then Tony Parker hits a jump shot. And then the next possession, Tony Parker comes down and hits a jump shot there. And that right there, that is the game in really one possession.
And those Tony Parker shots are the non-paint twos that, like, we've been harping on the Celtics for taking all year. They're like, they were great shots, and Tony Parker made them look very easy. But those aren't like the best shots in the world. It just so happened that they went in. But you're right, that sequence right there, in between those, Kyrie Irving missed what felt like a pretty wide open three. And so it's just, I don't know. It's at some points you just run into a guy like who's in the zone, and then I thought those things didn't bounce their way. I think they did a better job of getting to the paint. They actually started out the fourth quarter. The reason they had this 10-point lead is because they started out the fourth quarter really attacking the rim and they had five free throws to start out the fourth. It's just Kemba was going off, and then for that sequence, you're right. They didn't get a couple rebounds, and then Tony Parker goes off. I mean, if you look at their shot profile in the fourth quarter, and it's something I Kirk Goldsberry tweeted out and I retweeted, I think they went, what is the number, like 2 of 15 or something, or 4 of 15. But if you look at the shot profile, all of their misses are coming from these paint twos. Now, I guess the point in the more cynical fans are like, look at all these paint twos. They should be at the rim. But a Kyrie Irving jumper from beneath the foul line, like, that's a good shot to me. Marcus Smart posting up on Tony Parker, like, I think that's like a shot or an opportunity that we'd want. I don't think it's the worst shot profile in the world. The non-paint twos are the ones that are bad. But if you can get a NBA basketball player within the paint taking a shot, I mean, especially if it's Kyrie Irving, like, that's the kind of offense I think you would want. And so I thought there was better. There was signs of a better Celtics tonight. I think Tatum did a lot better, more to kind of attack the rim, passing up three pointers to really just like drive into the chest of players. I thought this was the best Terry Rozier game we've seen. He was active on defense. I thought we saw that actually a good bench in the second quarter. Jaylen Brown seemed to be attacking the rim. He had some moments. We should talk about why he only got 19 minutes later. But I don't know. This loss compared to the Utah loss, I understand they're all compounded and people get very frustrated, but this one's not as bad to me. This one, you just ran into a guy who's insane. Well, Kemba Walker.
The reason why is, with 5:55 left in the game, you had a 10-point lead, and that's how you're supposed to win those games.
And I think you're reading that one wrong. They at 5:55 there was tied 109 to 199. They had a 10-point lead with like 9 minutes left.
With 5:55 left, it was. Oh, I'm sorry, I am reading that wrong. I'm sorry. They had the 10-point lead. Sorry, I was.
It was after a Daniel Tice dunk.
It was 9:55. It was 9:53, actually.
Yeah.
So, right. So my apologies. So I did read that wrong.
But nonetheless, they gave up a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, which is not what you want.
Exactly. And that's where the frustration lies. And it is compounded. Now, look, if the Celtics came into this game with 10 wins and they were the one or the two seed and they had this exact same game, you could probably expect the reaction to be like, man, that's not a great loss, but man, Kemba just went nuts. I think the reactions that you get are, like you said, they're compounded by the fact that there's the history of this season so far. The fact that the Celtics have struggled to get to this point in the season, that we're at almost Thanksgiving and the Celtics are scuffling along at basically a 500 team or slightly above a 500 team to this point. So, like I said, if the Celtics were better, then this loss wouldn't pardon the pun, sting so much. I really didn't want to make that
Buzz City.
But the fact is that I get the point. And look, the positives, like you said, they did drive a lot more. I didn't see the same settling that we have seen in the past. So there's that. There's Kyrie overall didn't have a bad game.
He had a damn good game in terms of, if you look at his distribution numbers. So how many assists did he finish with?
11 assists. So, I mean, that was a season high for him. Ties a season high. He was 1 of 8 from three. He missed some makeable shots. He missed some tough shots, but he missed shots. Like, that's tough. Like, Kyrie early was really great, and he struggled, I think, down the stretch. He was 0 of 4 from 3 in the fourth quarter, and that, I think, was the difference. If he makes a couple of those, then it's a different story, and maybe the Celtics win this game. So, on the positive side, there's that. There's a negative side. There's a definite negative side. There are negative performances here. And we've got to talk about that after we talk about the social media outlets that the Locked On NBA Network has set up. Locked On NBA Net on Twitter and on Instagram. On Instagram, which all of the kids are loving nowadays, and I'm really trying to get into. I'm struggling as an old man to learn these new social media outlets. But Locked On NBA Net on Instagram is giving you all of these little tastes each day, 1 minute, four different shows, giving you 15-second snippets so you can sample all of the other shows and you can figure out. You want to take a little taste of Locked On Hornets? Go ahead. You should be checking them out anyway. It's a really good show. There's also Locked On NBA Net on Twitter, which is a curated, full league feed of all the Locked On NBA hosts. So it's on game nights, you get everything that's happening in the NBA. It's everybody's best tweets. It's not all of the, like, most of my tweets don't make it, but like 10% do, the good ones do. And that's true of every NBA host on the Locked On Network. So Locked On NBA Net on Twitter and on Instagram, check those out. All right, so not great things happened tonight, and I hate to single out Gordon Hayward, but Gordon Hayward had a bad night. This was a bad night, and there's a legitimate question, I think, about Gordon Hayward being in there down the stretch. If we're looking at this strictly about the winning this game and winning in the short term, not starting Gordon Hayward after the game, Brad Stevens said this was about getting Gordon Hayward the right groups. And if you look at, like Hayward struggled all night. His athleticism, it just seemed sapped. He just didn't seem there. Most of what he did was not particularly great. He did have four assists. He did have eight rebounds, so he tried to do some things to help the team. But at 4 points on 1 of 6 shooting and 0 of 3 from three, and not just that, but when he got to the rim, he had no explosiveness, couldn't finish at the rim, was trying to pass out of situations that he should have tried to finish, and it was just... It was a bit messy, and I hate singling out Hayward like this because the attempts at the rim show how far he is from being himself. But fact is that this was not a good game, and the recovery from the injury being what it is, he still has to find other ways to produce, and he didn't do much offensively tonight.
No, and the plays at the rim are kind of the most startling because it just shows like, yeah, this guy has an open dunk and you would expect him to explode up and dunk it. Like I said, he's passing out. One of them ended up in a Terry three and one of them actually ended up with him getting fouled. And it was a scary moment. It was just like, oh my God, you're not allowed to fall ever again.
Yeah. I almost lost my shit on that one.
The thing that actually concerns me the most about Gordon Hayward is his lack of, shooting in general from the outside, because the things at the rim I can kind of understand and make sense of. It's like, oh, he doesn't have the explosiveness net. He had that second surgery in May. Like, he's still coming back. Like, these are things that are going to eventually come as he like regains strength. But right now he's shooting under 30% from three when he's a career like 36% 3-point shooter. And when he in his last year at Utah, he was basically a 40% 3-point shooter, and he's basically missing a lot of open looks right now. To me, it doesn't, like, I can't see how that's like connected to his coming back or his athleticism, but it feels like he's not, like, if the plays at the rim aren't going to be there, you still want him to be able to knock down open shots. And it feels like he's still struggling to do that, even though he's making an impact. We talk about his playmaking and his rebounding, but it's the missing open shots, which feel the most problematic to me, because he could still be a very huge contributor to this team if he was just a 35% 3-point shooter. Like, that would be huge. But that's not like what's happening right now. Right now he's shooting under 40% from the field, which is in basketball terms, not good.
That's, yes. I'm glad you used that technical term.
Thank you.
I have to apologize, I think, for my over exuberance when it came to Gordon Hayward. I thought he was going to be so much better. And that's my own fault. Like, I really needed to temper my expectations, because I thought I spent so much time looking at his shooting and look, I listened to him. I listened to Brad. I listened to everybody say that he'd been working on his shot, and the shot is the one thing that you can work on when your a lower extremity is injured, a knee, an ankle, a leg, you can at least shoot the ball. Standing, sitting, whatever. And you see him shooting the ball, and the form is good. Everything is good. I thought he could come in here and have, like, a, if nothing else, a significantly good shooting season. And he's having the worst shooting season of his career. I mean, obviously shooting 30%, but like his true shooting percentage is at just about 50%, which is by far, by at least 2 percentage points, the lowest of his career. And that's not good. That's just not good. So we can chalk a lot of it up to his return from injury. We can chalk a lot of it up to finding the right groups to play with because he can't be what he used to be yet. I guess there's the question of, is he going to get back to what he used to be? Or is he never going to find that level of play, and then what happens?
I honestly think no one has any idea.
There's no, and
it's just like an unfalsifiable, there's no way to really answer that question. Growth mindset, sure, he's going to come back, and clearly he's not there. I don't think we talked like nearly enough about the fact that he had to have like that second surgery
right in
May, and so like really didn't start playing pickup until September. But I'm not a scientist. I've never even been accused of being a scientist, but I have no idea like where in his progress he should be, but clearly he's not there now. And I think this that connected back to what happened tonight. Like, do you want him on the court or do you want Jaylen Brown? Now, after the Utah game, Jaylen Brown was, for some reason, the immediate scapegoat, and everyone was piling on Jaylen Brown. I thought Jaylen Brown was pretty good tonight. He had some nice moments like going towards the rim, using his body to just be bigger than people. Continuing to do the Jaylen Brown thing where he goes to a monstrous posterizer dunk every single time, but he didn't play in the fourth quarter. Like, are we sure that we want Gordon Hayward getting those minutes right now over Jaylen Brown, who I think is just more competent physically right now? And I know people are going to be like, oh, Jaylen Brown's the worst, because people apparently love to hate on Jaylen Brown right now. But I was confused to kind of see him on the bench when I thought he actually had a better performance tonight. And maybe that's like, maybe instead of trying to post Marcus Smart against Tony Parker, you try to post Jaylen Brown. I don't know. I thought Jaylen Brown had some good moments going to the rim, and it was just Gordon Hayward gave you nothing in the fourth quarter. It was kind of confusing why he's the one who got the minutes.
Yeah, look, that's a legitimate question, and I don't know what Brad Stevens was thinking. And we have to go back to the original thought that we always have in the preseason. We know that Brad Stevens, and I've seen tweets about his lineups and his substitution patterns. We know that October, November, December is Brad Stevens' experimentation time. It's data gathering time. And so a lot of this, we get caught up in the day to day. And frankly,
we're the best Celtics podcast day to day, frankly.
I've heard that said before. But frankly, like this abundance of social media, the fact that we exist as a day-to-day podcast, the fact that there is this added scrutiny, that creates this situation where there is a lack of patience. And we all get caught up in it. Our job is to react every day to this is happening and that's happening and what does this mean and trying to figure out, you know, from every moment, like we're really focusing on the micro. And Brad Stevens is not focused on the same thing we're focused on. Whether you think it's right or wrong, whether it is right or wrong, he's just not focused on the exact same thing that we hosting the show, that fans listening to the show, or even fans who don't listen to the show. He's not focused on the same things that the rest of us are. He's focused on a bigger, long-term picture. And, of course, he wants to win these games. But he had that post-game press conference tonight, and he was not upset. And people all around me, people on social media, are pissed off. And I'm sitting here like, God, I can't believe that this is happening still. And he's sitting there kind of like smiling through the press conference. And he's, I don't want to say he's not concerned, but he saw positives, and we're sitting here talking about Kaizen and process over results. He thinks that the process is showing steps forward. And so I don't know. We have to just trust in Brad Stevens. I feel like he has earned that trust. As much as people are pissed off, every season has ended with the Celtics doing things that exceed expectations. This is the first season under Brad Stevens that we are at any point where they are not exceeding expectations, or they're so far behind expectations that we have to, even though we can't see it, we have to sit there and say, well, Brad sees something. If he's coming out, and you heard from the sound at the top of the podcast that he's not as upset as the rest of us are, he's got to see something.
I mean, I feel like we see something too. This clearly, like, in just in terms of feel of the gameplay, I know we've talked about it this whole year about them not putting 48 minutes together. But this night, compared to the Jazz game, like the Jazz game, they just got their asses kicked and were giving up half court alley oops. This night, like, it felt like they played a solid 39 minutes. Now, that I know that's not what you want to hear because you want to play the full 48. But, like, there were good things. They had moments. I thought Baines starting was an interesting wrinkle, but it gave them some energy to start the game. I thought Kyrie did well distributing the ball. Like, there are some positives. Like, we don't just have to rely on the fact that Brad's not panicking. Rely on what you saw. I mean, Celtics Twitter was – everyone was having a grand time up until about, I don't know, 9 p.m. tonight.
Yeah.
So, like,
it's
there,
true. It's true.
Rely on your own experiences. Like, there were positives. We got some good, like, I thought Terry Rozier had his best quarter of the year. Tatum's clearly attacking the rim more. I don't know. I don't think we just have to rely on Brad. I think the fact that Brad's not panicking is we can look to him as our leader and a beacon of hope, but rely on your own eyes. I think everyone else on Twitter before Kemba Walker started going insane, thought this was a pretty good Celtics performance. And clearly, do they have things to improve? Yes, but I don't think it's, if they came out and like basically played the way they did against the Jazz, I would be more room for panicking. But I don't know. I think they have the schedule coming up, one, to kind of correct things. And I know every time I say that, they end up getting their asses kicked by the Magic. But like they have a schedule coming up where they should be able to get some wins. And I think they're piecing things together. And clearly, with Brad tinkering with the lineup tonight, they're still figuring things out. So I'm definitely not in panic mode. Season doesn't start till Christmas. And all hail Kemba Walker, because you just got to tip your cap to him and call him your daddy.
Nice, Pedro. Okay, so we'll take a quick break here, come back and talk quickly about the starting lineups. And, you know, it's a Taco Tuesday. We have awards to hand out. And I'm
not many, though.
We got to stop doing Taco Tuesday after disappointing losses. Can't Tuesday just be a designated win? But let's talk quickly about the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast. Locked On Fantasy Basketball is a great podcast.
Add Kemba Walker.
Yes. That's great advice for the Locked On Fantasy players.
Thankfully, Josh Lloyd is better than I am.
Yes. Josh Lloyd does a fantastic job on Locked On Fantasy. Not only will he get you inside information on who to add, pretty sure Kemba Walker is widely owned 100% in all leagues, but you never know, but he's got the inside information on all the moves that you need to make. And even if you're not a fantasy basketball player, it's actually worth your while to listen. For half an hour, you get a full recap of the night in a certain style, and it's so in-depth that you really kind of get a different sense of the league. You don't even have to be a fantasy basketball player to understand, to get a greater knowledge of the league. So it's worth listening to, even as just an NBA junkie, because you get an in-depth recap and knowledge of the of what's happening in the NBA without just from a different perspective, without having to listen to people's necessarily opinions or whatever. So if that's your style, if that's what you want, or if you're just a fantasy player looking to win your league and shove it in your friends' faces, then subscribe to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast with Josh Lloyd, wherever you find your podcasts. So We should discuss the starting lineup, which interestingly included Aaron Baines, and then he only played 7.5 minutes for the entire game, which is weird. But I thought they came out and they had like 5 block shots in the first quarter. They came out and defended extraordinarily well. And one of the problems that they've had, guards getting to the rim, they kind of stopped that for a while, and then Brad kind of got away from it.
Yeah, it was kind of bizarre to see this change and then have Baines only play 7 minutes. It felt like he played those first 6 minutes and then came in the game in the fourth quarter, quickly got into a brouhaha that resulted in a jump ball, then did a terrible offensive foul and then was out of the game. And it's kind of like weird, like, oh, that's your starter. But I thought they had some good moments, and it kind of got Gordon Hayward with the second unit, and I thought they played well there with Gordon Hayward and Jaylen Brown and Rozier. But I don't know. Like, once the Brad quote is like, it really shouldn't matter who starts or who finishes or who's playing. It should be all about the winning. But after the first quarter, really the rotation looked exactly the same as it has the entire season. So we make a big deal about starting, but I didn't think it was like drastically changed how Brad worked the rotations in the second half. I mean, we saw it was after 30 seconds, Marcus Smart got subbed in for Aaron Baines. And that was clearly a point of emphasis to try and stop Kemba Walker. And that didn't work. But I don't know. I don't think it had a huge impact, but I'm curious to see if that's something Brad maintains moving forward against the Knicks.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. Part of it might have been the fact that Kemba Walker was – they were trying to prevent drives or whatever. I don't know. But he said after the game it's more about getting Gordon Hayward with the right groups. So we'll have to just monitor that moving forward. I don't know if that really in the long run was the right decision. But like we said before – it's all about gathering the data and throwing different lineups out there. Last season, having Aaron Baines as a starter was the absolute best defensive lineup I saw in the first quarter, how that can be a great defensive lineup. I got to go back and look because Brian Scalabrine said at 4 minutes into the game, like, you can see that the spacing is different. So I have to see if the spacing is in fact different with that lineup on the floor. I don't know. Brad Stevens is going to do a lot of different things. I wouldn't be surprised if he moves some other players around. I like Gordon Hayward starting the second quarter. So whether he starts and does that, or you sub him out early, we'll just have to watch for lineup tweaks. Any other things from the game that you wanted to get to?
I got a very brief junk drawer before we get to Taco Tuesday.
Yeah, let's do a junk drawer.
All right. At one point, Mook grabbed the basketball and basically held it like he was a fullback, driving through two people. I thought that was a cool move by Mook I'd never seen before. Malik Monk being 0-for-21 from three is hilarious to me, and we didn't see him at all, but I don't know. He's just known as a shooter, and him missing all those shots is a good old-fashioned fun. For some reason, I was watching on YouTube TV. And for some reason, the commercials I had didn't have any sound, but they still had like some light backup music. It was very weird and dystopian, but I think it actually improved the overall commercial experience. I don't know if that was just my feed, but no, it was very weird.
There was a track like the McDonald's commercial where they had like the guys were saying nice all the time, but you just didn't hear them say nice. It was just backup.
Yeah, that like Amica ones, some Geico ones. It was just like no. Yeah. It never had the voice track, and it was very confusing. It was bizarre. Speaking of the broadcast, when they flashed to Scal and Mike Gorman like at halftime, it seriously looked like they were in an underground bunker somewhere in Kabul. They're like, it looked so far away from the game. It was fantastic. What is up with the Hernan Gomez's? Why are they so good at basketball and so sexy at the same time? Someone needs to check on them. And then my final thing, Mookie Betts was at the game. I'm pretty sure he's from North Carolina, but they showed it there. He just tweeted out a picture of him next to Michael Jordan. And is Mookie Betts like 5'6"? The man is tiny.
Mookie Betts is not very tall. Baseball players in general are not big. Like, so Zion Williamson is the same size as Aaron Judge. And Aaron Judge, when he goes to the plate, is massive. And Zion, when he goes to, like, Zion is a beast.
Also massive. Also a huge load.
Also huge. But, like, if you put him in the NBA, he's not bigger than a lot of people. He's what, 6'8"?
Yeah, 6'8", 340.
Yeah. But, hold on, I'm going to pull up his actual statistics here. They list him as 6'7", 285. So that's huge, but there are bigger people than him in the NBA. 6'7" is, I mean, he's a load, but there are people who are 6 inches, a half foot taller than him in the NBA. And so when you look at a baseball player that's this guy's size, that's Aaron Judge. He's the biggest baseball player ever, ever. Mookie Betts is 5'9". The MVP is 5'9". He's awesome.
But Kemba Walker would dwarf him, and Kemba Walker looks very small out there.
Right. Like, I always joke, like, I'm 6'5", and I essentially have the same dimensions as, like, Jason Kidd. And Jason Kidd was never the hugest guy out there, but every room I walk into, I'm like the biggest guy in the room. In the NBA, I'm tiny. I'm tiny in the NBA. One of my favorite moments was I was at the All-Star game in Dallas a while back, and I got into the ESPN party, and that was when, like, Hasheem Thabeet was a rookie. And I walked past Hasheem Thabeet, and he was, like, literally twice my size. I was walking through that party with a bunch of NBA players, and I was looking at their chests. I was like, holy shit, this is what normal people feel like in a club. Like, everybody was taller than me. I couldn't see over anybody. But that's what the NBA is. NBA is just gigantic human beings, where somebody who is tall in real life is nothing to them. So somebody who's like Mookie Betts, who's 5'9", is like minuscule.
Yeah, I strong agree. He looked like he was Michael Jordan's waist. And there it is. There's the junk drawer. You get a little lesson on comparative height. And a little lesson on a hot Spanish brothers, the Hernan Gomez.
Yeah, the Hernan Gomez were a big topic on Celtics Twitter.
I mean, we know to appreciate erotic basketball, and those two guys are purveyors of it.
So let's use that as a transition to the Taco Tuesday. I just don't want to give anybody anything. I don't feel like it.
First we have to give a taco to our main man, Jovian Shadow. Did you see this? The Taco J's
placemat thing?
The menu he made for this is amazing. I'm going to retweet it again right now, but this was, I just wish, it was better. Like, the Celtics were playing better, so we could actually give out these awards, but, so, shouts to Jovian Shadow, because he gave a number of different levels of tacos we could give out. It's just none of these guys are deserving, except I think Kyrie Irving for his performance against the Raptors has to be there. Like,
absolutely.
If you score over 40 points and over 10 assists and lead the team in overtime, I think you have to be there.
Yeah, like, look, Kyrie even tonight, like, so he didn't shoot well from three at all, 1 of 8, but he still shot. That brought his overall shooting percentage down. He still had 27 points, 11 assists, another 2 steals. He's really performing well defensively in general. So I think that's all worth having him. I think he's like a perennial taco this season, but definitely Kyrie for sure.
Does anyone get it from the Bulls' performance? Like,
well, I'm looking at the Jaylen Brown has been better, but he also had a very bad game against Toronto. He was not good against Utah. I don't see, like, Jason Tatum has been better, but taco worthy? No.
I just, like, do we give Kemba a taco? Like, was he that good?
I mean, we could. I mean, when you do what he did, my lack of preparedness tonight, someone tweeted us and asked if Brad Stevens should get some sort of taco for the emptying the bench 2 minutes into the fourth quarter against Utah. Does Brad Stevens?
I'm going to say no, because he didn't dress Robert Williams and deprived us of good Robert Williams time when he did empty the bench. And so until Robert Williams is dressed for every game, I don't think I can give Brad Stevens a taco for bench usage.
Do we get a secondary award? Do we go beyond taco and say, like, he gets at least the hot sauce for the subs for emptying the bench and sending a message?
Yeah, he gets some hot sauce. He sprinkled in some hot sauce there. And also, looking at the menu now that Jovi and Shadow provided, there is an award for the German. And that's just reminding me that I thought Daniel Tice had some good minutes tonight. And I realized we hadn't talked about him yet. Also, we never mentioned Marcus Smart, who for a moment there was 4-for-4 from deep. Thought he had some good moments and did his best walking around Kemba. I don't think either of them are taco worthy, so maybe they deserve some hot sauce or some extra stuff as well. But
maybe Marcus Smart gets free guac for that performance.
Yeah,
they
sure.
always charge extra for free guac for guacamole, but for shooting 4 of 6 from three for Marcus Smart, he gets free guac, which is that means a lot. I mean, they really tack on a couple of bucks.
Yeah, no, they'll nickel and dime you anywhere. So the free guac is nice. And that's all we can do. These are tough times. Yeah. When we're winning, everyone eats.
Everybody eats.
But when you're losing, only certain players get tacos. You know what? We got to survive in this tough winless economy.
Yeah. We're going to hoard our tacos. We're going to ration the tacos out for better times. All right. Well, that's a fair place to end this thing. Appreciate you guys listening, even though I'm sure a lot of you are very frustrated. But as Brad Stevens says, there was progress. It just happened to be stymied by Kemba Walker being awesome. They need to free Kemba Walker. Get him either out of Charlotte or put a winner around him in Charlotte. Do something. That dude needs to get the hell out of there and get a bigger spotlight. I feel like he's going to be a Knick next year. It just makes too much sense. He's got to get out of there and go to the Knicks and just get that spotlight, because he deserves it, which sucks.
Oh, I know someone who deserves a taco, and it's the entire Washington Wizards.
Ah, yes, 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 yes. For being so dysfunctional. Yeah.
For yelling F you at your coach, and for Bradley Beal saying, I've been dealing with this for 7 years, and for Dwight Howard being a pain in the butt. Everyone deserves a taco.
The whole Wizards talking.
And to Kelly Olynyk for ruining the Washington Wizards, who were one game from the Eastern Conference Finals just 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. That was fun. That was fun. Yeah, the Wizards. look, they are.
Yeah, let's just end on that note. Let's just think about the Wizards until the next game.
Think of the Wizards and just laugh. When things aren't going well for your team, let's just bask in the schadenfreude that is the Wizards basketball team and all of their preseason shit talking and how it's just come back to haunt them. Their comeuppance is due. It's here. It's now. And that's a great place to end it. Thanks for listening. If you are not a regular subscriber, if you are just joining the podcast, thank you. We really love the fact that you are a new listener. Hope you have enjoyed the show. We promise it gets better as the team gets better. We promise the team will get better. But right now, it kind of sucks. So, but subscribe so you can get these podcasts in your whatever app or podcast catcher or Spotify, whatever. So subscribe and do that. If you are a subscriber, 5-star rating, written review really helps us out. And, of course, share the podcast, spread the word, tell everybody. Listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.